Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android Developer Relations team. And today we have three guests.
Hi, I'm Amit. I work on the Android Framework team.
Hi, I'm Makoto. I also work on the Android Framework.
And?
I'm Kweku. I also work on Android Framework.
Oh, coincidence. Three people from the same team. What? Actually, all sitting next to each other as well. And strangely, sitting very close to my desk, which made it really convenient for me to walk over and ask if you wanted to come on the podcast today to talk about, what are we going to talk about? Let's start talking about processes. So all three of you, if I understand correctly, basically work on power concerns, how to conserve power and battery, and what to do about all the stuff running on the phone. Is that a fair?
That's right, Chet. So yeah, we manage the process lifecycle for Android apps. We decide when the process starts based on who's requesting it. What are the different states the process goes through based on what's running in the process? Is it an activity? Is it a content provider or a service? And then we decide whether to keep it around or to kill it. So that's basically the lifecycle that we need to deal with, because there are so many different apps trying to use the phone for different reasons, as well as the user trying to launch these apps. And keeping multiple of these apps alive, cached, so that they're available quickly for the next time you want to use them. Some of the things we have to deal with are, setting privileges for these apps based on what their current lifecycle states are. This would determine, what kind of permissions you get, how much memory you could be using, how much CPU you could be using.
Wait. So just based on how recently you were started, you're going to get different permissions? Can you, the privileges, how do privileges relate to, lifecycle state?
Right. So there are different kinds of life cycles, right? So we have activity life cycles, which means the app is in the foreground, the user is aware of it, they're seeing the app. At that time, it's obvious that these apps can get all the privileges they need, as long as they have the permission. So there's a little bit of a difference between whether you have the permission or whether you have the privilege right now to use that permission.
Got it.
So if you're an activity, you are considered to be in the foreground. User's aware of you, and it's okay to use things like location or camera or microphone, right? But if you're in the background, you are not considered as privileged. So a lifecycle for a service, for instance, you wouldn't be considered a foreground app that the user is aware of. So it's all about, is the user aware of your presence right now on the screen?
Okay. And then you said the stuff that you work with also decides when to kill apps, which sounds really exciting and dangerous.
Right.
How does that happen?
So first, let's back off a little bit and say, okay, there are apps running. They've kind of run out of lifecycle, and they are just sitting around in a cache state. The reason we keep apps in a cache state is that if the user wants to switch back to them at some point in the future, they don't have to do a lot of work reloading all of their state, right? But then as you keep switching between apps as a user, there's more and more apps sitting around in the background using up memory. And at some point, we need to reallocate these resources to the latest app that's in the foreground. And that's when we need to decide, who do we evict from memory, right? How do we make space for the new app? Let's say you launch the camera. Camera takes up a lot of memory to keep your photos in while doing HDR processing. So we need to evict apps that are out of lifecycle or in a lower priority lifecycle. So let me give you an example. An activity or something that's showing a window has the highest priority. Let's say you have a job running or some other background service running. That one is considered a lower priority. Or if you just handle the broadcast and you're done handling the broadcast, then you're in a cache state. So anything that's of lower priority gets a lower memory ranking. We call this the UMAdjust score. That is the out of memory adjustment. So based on your recency of lifecycle and what your current lifecycle state is, or what we call a process state, we decide what your memory ranking should be. And then what the kernel does is it looks at all the apps that are in memory, ranks them from lowest priority to highest, and starts killing them from the bottom up, right? Another thing that happens here is as they're getting killed from the lowest ranking to the highest ranking to make more space, we also think about how much RAM are you actually holding. So the more RAM you hold while out of lifecycle, the higher the chances we'll kill you to make room for a new app.
Because we can get more out of that murder.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Out of that one action, instead of having to kill seven apps, if you can kill one and get the memory that you need, the resources that you need.
That's right.
Okay. So I'm interested in like the decision to go with this model. Like, was this the model of basically having these cache states and then automatically killing apps and including things like the startup state? What is it? The bundle that you get when your app activity starts up so that you can sort of retrieve the state that you were at previously. Was that a new concept with Android? Because like the model that I think we're more used to is in, you know, desktops and server systems where you can kind of think as memory in the OS as virtual memory being infinite, right? So you just keep launching apps, and if it runs out of memory, if it runs out of RAM, then it just caches stuff on disk. It doesn't kill it.
That's a very good point. So the reason it's different from a desktop here is that we don't have the kind of storage where we could swap to disk when we're running out of space. We need to use memory because flash is not very good at doing a lot of reads and writes over time because it wears out, right? So we need to try to keep these things in memory or completely remove them. We can't swap to disk. It's kind of unique to mobile devices, which are using flash and not hard disks, right?
So was this done on other OSs at the time? I'm just curious how the system came about. Like, was this a proven system at the time, or was it like, oh, Android needs, you know, has different constraints. Let's do this thing and see how it works out. Don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure okay. If other OSs did this at that time.
I think I long time ago, I wrote an app for Palm OS, yep. And then I think they had something similar.
Okay.
There was no life cycle, like you are supposed to save states kind of all the time whenever yep. You go to the background.
Okay.
To like kind of make it transparent, make it look like you are always alive.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I think Danger, I was talking to Brian Swetland or maybe Dan Bornstein, and they were saying like they would just run out of memory and then apps would just go away. Like they didn't really have a good caching and recovery system. It's just they would run out of memory and eventually you kind of needed to reboot the system. But they didn't have quite the same constraints in that like there weren't tons of apps to run on those devices at that time, much earlier. It was like 5 or 6 years before Android came out. So anyway, on with whatever you were saying.
Sure. Yeah, so we got a lot of feedback from developers recently that their apps are getting killed. They want to try to stay in memory as much as they can. For whatever reason, they want to stay in memory. One of the big reasons is if they do get evicted because we're running low on memory, their startup times, the cold start time is quite high, right? Especially really large apps, social networking apps, for instance, or games. They require a lot of memory and a lot of initial loading to come to a state where the user can start interacting with them. And they would really love to stay in memory for as long as they can, even if they're not in the foreground. But unfortunately, the resources are limited, so we have to kill them to make room for other apps. And developers have been asking for, hey, I don't know why my app was killed. Can you tell me why? Did I crash? Was it some kind of native seg fault? Was it low memory killing? Was it killed because I used too many resources or I used too much RAM? So we're introducing in Android 11 a new API that allows you to query your most recent kill stats. Like, why were you killed for the last 16 times that you were killed, for instance? It's kind of a circular buffer. So you get to know what was the recent history of your kills. Were you killed because we ran out of memory? In which case, there's really nothing you can do other than try to use less memory, right? But if it's because you crashed or you ANR'd, then it it's something actionable. Maybe you take it back to your developers and you fix your app.
So there are other APIs that we've had in the platform for a while that allow you to listen in when the system would like more memory, right? Like it'll send a call out and say, hey, I'm reaching a state where I'm going to start killing stuff. It'd be a really good time to free resources. So there's already a way for apps to plug in, and hopefully, like, if it's, let's say it's a game that, you know, has tons and tons of assets for, you know, multiple levels, then it could find out, oh, I better purge some of the stuff to make sure that the system has enough memory and I don't need to be killed, right?
That's right. So we do have an on-trim memory API, which we call back on apps. And apps, some apps do react to those. Not everyone does. It would be great if everyone did. But we do that as the first step.
Yeah.
So we do ask for apps to try to reduce their memory consumption right now, especially if they're out of lifecycle. And if they don't get to release enough memory fast enough, there's still an app that's trying to load, and the kernel needs to do what it can to make room for it. So we still end up having to kill apps. But if apps are hygienic and they keep releasing resources as soon as they don't need it anymore, then we'd get into the situation less frequently, and we wouldn't have to kill apps and have them cold start again the next time they need it.
Right. And it's not like they get on, you know, a good student list and you know in your heuristic, oh, this is an app that takes care of its memory very carefully. But if the app is able to trim memory and basically shows up with a smaller footprint by the heuristic you described before, it won't be killed as frequently because there's probably other bigger apps that are tastier.
Right. Well, it's a little trickier than that, right? If they're all on equal footing in terms of their process state and their memory ranking, then the ones that are using more memory are more likely to be killed.
Yep.
But if they're not on equal footing, then like I said, we start from the bottom of the memory rank and kill from there. So if you happen to be at the bottom, you're going to get killed no matter what.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the app kill stats. So at the time we're recording this, DP1, developer preview one for Android 11 just came out today. All right, so by the time this podcast comes out, it should be available for people to play with. Is that API in DP1?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and is that something like you're still sort of massaging that and want some feedback on that, or is that pretty solid, pretty straightforward? We just report some stats.
I think we've gone most of the way there. If there are reasons that we seem to have missed, and you, as an app developer, have seen those reasons a lot in the field, and you'd like to have that as part of the API, then please do reach out to us.
Okay. Any other process stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, moving forward from here, it's about managing resources, right? So this is about the process lifecycle. The rest is about managing resources that the apps are trying to use.
Right.
In terms of, scheduling stuff to do later, right? Like jobs and alarms and things like that. So we could talk about some of that.
Yeah, let's do that. So put this in context where we've had at least one or two episodes with folks from Work Manager, which is the API that we recommend for dealing with, you know, background or jobs that can be handled later. But underneath it is platform capabilities, which started with Job Scheduler in KitKat, I think. But then there's other things that people use, whether it's, GCM network dispatcher, job dispatcher, or people running alarms. So there are underlying mechanisms that Work Manager uses. Work Manager is sort of the API to access all of them. But in the meantime, you keep adding capabilities to the platform to make delayed jobs more capable. So, yeah, why don't we figure out what those are about?
Yeah, so actually Job Scheduler was introduced in Lollipop, Android 5, I believe.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so we've been tweaking the policy ever since, adding extra APIs in case developers need those to help tell the system which things are more important or help the system better choose when to run the job. Most recently in Android 10, we switched how Job Scheduler and Alarm Manager throttle apps based on their app standby buckets to a quota-based system. So before Android 10, we were using how do I say, a fixed interval system to, so whenever an app needed to do something, we would either let it run or wait until some amount of time, a few hours later, yeah, and then let it run. Now with Android 10, we use a quota-based system so that if your app hasn't used all of its quota, it can run immediately. And that should help address some of the developer pain points that we've heard with the previous system.
Okay. So like saving your pennies up for the end of the month and then you can blow it all on a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. okay. That was Android 10. So there's an interesting dynamic between Work Manager, which is sort of a generic API that covers services offered by different things in the platform or not, like Job Dispatcher, versus the underlying platform capability. So then what impact did that have on Work Manager? Or I guess this is more just a policy of when these things occur. It doesn't really affect the API level?
Yeah, it's just a policy change. For Work Manager, nothing changes on their end, or for developers, nothing changes. It should just mean that developers get their jobs or their work to run earlier than it would have run in previous versions.
Okay, and then based on what Amit was saying earlier, so there's APIs to find out when your app gets killed. Are there APIs in Job Scheduler or Work Manager to find out why did I get denied? Like why am I not running now, or is it just that you're just not going to run and sometime later it'll kick off?
Yeah, we don't have any mechanism to ask why the job hasn't run yet. If you look in a bug report, you can see why the job hasn't run, but you can't do that programmatically.
The bug report, the Logcat?
Not Logcat, Dumpsys.
Yeah. Dumpsys.
Okay.
ADB shell, Dumpsys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, low-level bug report stuff. Okay.
But we do have an API. When we tell a job it has to stop running, we do tell the job why we're stopping the job.
Okay.
Is that public though? I don't think it is.
Should be.
ADB shell Dumpsys? I've done Dumpsys for various things like
window stop
information.
Reason.
Oh,
stop
this
reason?
This particular
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Is it not?
Oh, maybe it is.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's homework for the listeners. Go to AOSP. And see if it's a public facility. Okay.
So some of the reasons why we delay jobs are various device states or app-specific states, right? So it could be that the device is dozing, so we wait until it comes out of doze, which is the deep sleep that it goes into when you haven't been using the device, right? The other reason could be that you're in a battery saver mode right now because the user is running low and they put the device in battery saver. So those kinds of triggers are something that you could also look at and see, okay, was the device in doze? Of course, you need to look at the device and do a Dumpsys or bug report to figure that out. But that also gives you a reason for why your jobs might not have run for the last 2 hours, right? Or for an entire day because the user kept the device in a battery saver mode.
Okay. Also, the life cycle affects it as well, right? The number of jobs that you can run within the quota is affected by whether you're foreground or not?
That's right. Whether you're foreground and also how frequently you've been used.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned a couple of different things that we should come back to. You mentioned app standby buckets, which was a concept in P? Q? In the last release?
P.
It actually predates P, where there were two buckets all the way back. Marshmallow?
Was that the original Doze stuff?
Yeah, the same time that Doze came out.
Okay, so take me through the evolution of app standby buckets then.
I don't know if I know the history too well, but back in Marshmallow, I guess it was, there was the concept of an inactive app or an idle app where the app hadn't been used for a long period of time. So we would say the app was inactive, it wouldn't get to run as much. When we, in P or Android Pi, we introduced the concept of app standby buckets, where the idea is that if the user hasn't used an app in a long time, in a long amount of time, it is likely not, the work that it's doing is likely not useful to the user immediately. And so we can defer some of the work until later.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we have four buckets where the most active or the most recently used apps are in the active bucket, and so they can get to run freely. Whereas the ones that haven't been used in a few days, say, are in the rare bucket, and so they only get to run once a day. So they still get to do work, but not as much since the work isn't for the user.
Okay.
And if you're in one of these states where you're getting throttled more, you can actually query your bucket history. So there's an API for developers to use. So you can also get some stats from that and decide, oh, okay, in this set of devices on my users, I tend to be in a low bucket, which is why I'm not running jobs as frequently. So that helps you realize that, yeah, the user's not using your app as much, which is why you're not running jobs as much.
Okay, and it's about running work. I thought it also affected like some amount of permissions or privileges, right? Like the things that you could do, like access to network.
Network is one, yes. Network is the only one. So we throttle jobs alarms, and we also prevent you from accessing the network if you're in the rare bucket. Other buckets are okay for network access. And also we limit how many high priority messages you can receive, depending on the bucket.
That's FCM messages.
FCM messages.
Okay. So we won't wake up your app if a message comes in for your...
So it's there's a difference between high priority and normal priority messages.
Yeah.
So if your server is pushing a high priority message, those are usually delivered immediately, even if your device is dozing or battery saver or any of those other global restrictive modes. But that means, you know, if we don't throttle the number of high priority messages that are coming in, you're going to affect the battery life of the device when it should be in deep doze and not doing any work. You're forcing it to wake up and do some work.
Right. So was this being abused? Like, was that change because there were some apps that, you know, every message was high priority no matter what?
Yeah. I mean, the whole purpose of high priority messages was to send notifications to the user, like you have an incoming communication of some sort.
Yeah.
Right? Apps were abusing it by sending high priority messages just so that they could come back into memory because we might have evicted them for low memory reasons or whatever. And they want to continue to stay in memory, right? So that's one way to abuse it. And as we are throttling alarms and jobs, which allow you to wake up periodically, if we don't let you do that, then the other avenue is to keep sending high priority messages, right? So we just needed to close all the holes so that you don't get to wake up when we feel like the user should not be, you know, experiencing the battery drain of your app when it's not as important to them.
Okay. I was also curious. So you mentioned Doze, and that was the facilities that came online, I think, in Marshmallow, as you'd mentioned, where, you know, battery device is not being used, screen is off for a while, and it's on battery, and therefore it goes into this, you know, more inactive mode and wakes up occasionally to sync information. And then we had Doze Light, which same thing, except the phone could actually be moving as long as the screen was off. Have we done anything specifically in the Doze area since then? Or was that as far as we took the Doze project?
We've been kind of tweaking
the
parameters of Doze over time. We've experimented with machine learning on, what...
As one does.
Yeah. So we have some things that we're trying and some things that have helped us actually... improve that algorithm a little bit. I think Kweku's made some recent changes.
Yeah, in Battery Saver and Android 10 as well, we make the device go into doze faster when the user turns the screen off. Okay. That way it's doing less work. It's in Battery Saver, so obviously they want to try and save as much power as possible. And so we saw that adding full doze when the screen is off faster would help there.
Yeah. Okay. And that was like machine learning or?
No, that was just
observation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you also made a change of not getting out of doze when the screen gets on.
Oh, yeah. So we had this hunch that people just turn on the screen to check the time or to see if they have any high priority notifications and then put it back in their pocket. This usually in the past, used to bring the device out of doze, which means it's going to take another 2 hours or at least an hour to go back into deep doze, and that's punishment for checking the time.
Yeah.
Which is why, actually, I started wearing a watch now. I don't want to waste my phone's battery by taking it out just to check the time, right? But one thing we realized from that was if you're not unlocking the screen, we don't really need to come out of doze, right? Because all you're doing is checking what's on your locked screen,
yeah,
and then putting it back in your pocket or your purse. So might as well not come out of doze unless you actually unlock or interact with the device, right, in some way. So that's another optimization we made.
Interesting. It seems like instead of selling devices with bigger batteries, we could also just sell them with watches instead. Maybe that would help. I wonder what impact ambient mode has had on some of this stuff, because now you can actually look at your phone and see the time without even turning on the screen, right? Because your screen is going to go into low power on mode.
It's still not free.
Yeah. Right?
Even ambient mode takes up some amount of battery because the screen is on. I think that's a personal preference, really.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. And then another thing you had mentioned on the walkover was privileges, privacy stuff.
Yes. So as you know, there's been a lot of focus on privacy and locking down, privacy-sensitive information, such as location and access to camera and microphone. So in Android 10, we introduced, let me back up a little bit. So there's the concept of while in use permissions, which you might have heard of. So what that means is if the user is using your app right now, you get higher privileges, right? Like I mentioned, you have the permission, but you said only while I'm using the app, while it's in the foreground.
That tri-state dialogue came in Android 10 for a location, right?
That's right.
Like deny or accept always or accept only when it's in foreground.
Right. But here's the catch. What's obvious to some users is that, if you are launching an activity, it's in use, right? But if that activity now minimizes into a foreground service notification, is it still in use?
Yeah.
I would say half the users would think it's not in use. It's just a notification. Every app that shows a notification is not necessarily in use because it happens in the background. But some users might think, it was a continuation from my Maps navigation that turned into a foreground service because I hit home, and now there's a persistent notification, right? So to make that even more obvious and accountable, in Android 10, we required apps to say, if you want to get location while in a foreground service for something like a while in use permission, then you have to declare it in your manifest. That way we can, just by looking at the manifest, we can say that you are actually intending to use location while in a foreground service and not just in an activity.
Yep.
As well as we can enforce that you don't get it if you don't request that in the manifest, right?
Yep.
So that was what we introduced in Android 10. And in 11, coming in DP2, we are introducing two additional privacy-sensitive permissions to follow the same pattern, which is microphone and camera. In 10, it was media projection and location. And in 11, it will be additionally microphone and camera.
This is, you said DP2, which means it's not out at the time this podcast launches, but will be out soon, whenever Developer Preview 2 is out.
That's right.
And then this is probably something we want people to play with, because it is going to affect the behavior of some apps, right? Like if they're using this, if they're relying on this capability right now for doing something reasonable, okay, then do the right thing here and then send us feedback.
That's right.
I was curious. So all of this is the stuff that your team works on now, but you've been there for a while. You've worked on a bunch of other stuff as well, right? Like you were on Android for a long time before I got there.
That's right.
Yeah. When did you join?
So I started a few months before 1.0 came out. I initially started off working on the Settings app, which was almost empty. And I came in on my first day. I had 60 feature requests to implement all the screens in Settings. So that was interesting. And then from that, I moved on to working on the first soft keyboard for Android, because the G1 had a hard keyboard. And then the next device, there was no keyboard. So we needed to build a soft keyboard for that. And that was my second project.
The MyTouch, right? HTC MyTouch?
That's right, yes.
Okay, all right.
We call it the Sapphire.
Okay. Internal, external names. Okay. So that was interesting. So did we have any of the capabilities of soft keyboard? We certainly had touch capabilities in the G1 and 1.0. So you could touch the screen and get events, but we didn't have any way to process keyboard. Like there was no UI for a keyboard, no way to say, turn this into a W.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And that's come a long way since then. All right. Soft keyboard, did that take you all the way through 1.0 then? No. That was post 1.0.
It was like
Cupcake.
Nexus
Donut.
One.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Eclair.
Okay. Right. Cool. Did we forget anything? Processes, activities, life cycle, battery. It's easy, right? It all just works.
Yeah. So the request we have for developers is please be careful with how much memory you use and release it as soon as you don't need it, because that really helps the entire, device being healthy and the user having a good experience. The more developers abuse the amount of memory they use and the CPU resources when they don't need to, the higher the chance we have to build these throttling and killing mechanisms. So, when we give you a hint to trim memory, please do so. And if you're out of lifecycle, release all your textures and whatnot that you might not need anymore. And we will, going forward, try to provide more facilities for making it easier to release memory or use as little as necessary.
I wonder if there's, I should have stopped you there because that was a really nice way to close it out, but I'm going to keep talking anyway. I wonder if there's a mechanism we could figure out so that just like on-trim memory, it's a way for them to jettison like large chunks of things that they've loaded, like textures for levels they're not in or whatever it is. If there's a way to segment applications to maybe the module level or something or the activity level where it would be easier to say, okay, we can get rid of this part of the app so that like the core logic and state could be there and cached in a minimal form, but we could sort of get rid of larger and larger pieces of it? Or is that just a hard problem to solve?
It's something that we do want to look into. I think analyzing big apps and seeing how they're using resources and what difficulties they face in trying to use limited resources when necessary will help us build better mechanisms for that. There are mechanisms like using splits and just not loading the whole world in your application object. In fact, you shouldn't have an application object. That's the best thing to do. Just your incoming component should be the one that decides what resources you need to load, right?
Right. Yeah, I just wonder, like I was thinking about app bundles and dynamic feature modules recently, and I was wondering whether that could also tie in at the OS level so that, well, if this is the way that you can segment your application for download and install and launching, is there a way that that could then also tie into the lifecycle at the operating system level so that we can make clearer decisions about, the distinction between this part of your app and that part of the app and part of it could go if it needs to because we still retain a core somewhere? Or if that's just hard to solve because once you're in that UI.
It's a hard problem. We need to work with the art team on...
I think we may be able to use multi-processes though. Apps can have multiple processes. A single app can have multiple processes. Like for example, Play Music, Google Play Music. When it's like, when it's showing the UI, it uses a lot more memory.
Yeah.
But when it's in the background and then playing music, it doesn't want to use as much memory, right? So it has two processes, one for the UI and then the other for streaming. And then the UI process can be killed at any moment without killing the streaming process. So maybe we can utilize that and make it kind of easier to use for developers. Because right now, processes are the only kind of unit where we can kind of release memories at once.
Yeah. Okay. So feature request.
Sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.